You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What's up, guys? It's Chet Hanks, and I just finished with Hollywood Unlocked Uncensored. It was a great interview. I had a good time, and we just talked about all sorts of things, you know, in my life and everything. So it was dope.
What up, everybody? This is Jay Celine. This is Hollywood Unlocked Uncensored.
And I'm Melissa Ford, a.k.a. The Curve Queen.
Your boy Giovanni.
Hola. Okay, and we have a new swole, Chet Hanks, that just
swole
walked
mate.
In.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so listen, before we get started, literally the day I woke up and thought, I need to interview Chet Hanks. I swear this sounds kind of weird because, like, out of all the people
in the world you could have been thinking of.
Of course, I thought about Beyonce, but she ain't fucking with me. Yeah. I thought of Chet. We were at lunch at Le Petit Four, and here he comes walking down the street.
Yeah. Love Le Petit Four.
And so here we
are. So you recognize who he was.
Right.
Are you crazy?
Yeah.
I'm a consumer of pop culture. We write about stuff all day long. Of course I know Chet is.
I'm just saying, because this is my first time. Ever, like, I only thought it was Colin, so now I know about you.
Yeah, a lot of people think that.
Yeah, I never knew he had another one.
Yeah, well, I got a little brother too.
Oh, dope.
And a sister.
Well, I didn't know about the other siblings because Chet knows how to stay in the media.
Yeah,
Hollywood Unlocked. we write about popular people, but we talked yesterday on the phone. So you haven't done a lot of sit down interviews.
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, we feel privileged. I appreciate
you for coming.
No,
thank you guys for having me up here.
Always,
it's dope. It's a blessing to be able to. Come and do things like this. So
thank you guys.
I was waiting for the text to say, I can't make it. But I prayed. I said, come on, Chet, don't let me down. Okay. So
Well, first, congratulations on your little girl.
Beautiful.
She's absolutely gorgeous.
Thank you so much. What is it? Micaiah.
That's a really beautiful name.
Thank you.
So for Chet that doesn't know, Giovanni he struggles with pronunciation. We try to help him. So we jointly shaped that into a name. But no, she's really gorgeous. We're definitely going to get into that. Okay, so let's go all the way back. So most people know you for being completely reckless on social media.
Facts.
I have to start with, you know, I was on Love & Hip Hop for two, you know that, right?
I actually didn't know that until I ran into you.
Okay. So I was on there with your ex, Hazel. We had a moment. So how did you and Hazel end up even meeting each other? Because when I think about the universe, I don't really think about you two being in the same place.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
We actually met each other just out one night. I was at Katana on Sunset.
Okay.
And I was just out. I was like at the bar and I saw like this girl. I was like looking at me and I just went up to go talk to her.
So that was it.
That's how we met. Yeah. Yeah.
Pulled
her. Yeah. Oh, you know, I'll talk to anybody. Like,
Let's talk about the time you got at Megan Good.
Oh, yeah. That was on the day we met.
Swag. Yeah.
Tell that story because I thought it was funny.
Well, right after I had ran into Jason and we had met for the first time, I got out of the gym and I walked to go get some food at Takaya. You know Takaya on Sunset?
Out of my budget.
It's a healthy restaurant.
No, it's good. It's good. It's like, it's like healthy, like Mexican food.
Gotcha.
And this is like directly after we had spoke. And I went I went to go get some food and she was there. And I was like, yo, I'm not going to like go see like Megan Good in person and like
not try
like,
to hit on her.
And like not take the opportunity to like say something. So I went, when she was leaving, I went up to her and I was like, yo. I was like, yo, you know, I talked to her a little bit and I was like, can I get your number? And she was like, I'm married.
And I was like, so?
I was like, oh, I had no idea.
No,
I had no idea she was married. So it was a massive failure. It was a massive failure, but I give myself props for making
the effort. Listen, you shoot
for trying. You know what I mean?
You shot.
Shoot for the stars.
You shot your shot. Like you're supposed to.
Yeah.
But it's funny, when you left, so I caught, so me and Melissa walked up, you told us. I called Megan. I said, hey, Megan, you ran into Chet? She said, yeah. She said, he didn't know I was married, but he was so nice. I said, hey, listen, the man gets a gold star for shooting the shot.
Yeah. Yo, you know? Yeah. I would be terrified, bro. So salute to you.
Hey, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take, right? So
mm-hmm. Listen, that's the mentality. I was just telling the story a minute ago. I met Oprah yesterday. And there were so many things I wanted to say. But, you know, like, you do forget. I mean, you don't forget, but you just like, fuck, she don't want to hear that shit. Mm. So I just said, hello, I'm a fan. Kept it pushing. Yeah. Stole a picture.
Yeah.
Okay.
I do that too. Like sometimes I'll like fanboy out for a little minute.
Yeah.
And I'll like be like, man, like they have to deal with shit.
Okay,
like,
wait.
That's
who are you a fan of? Who would you fan out for?
All right, well, I'll give you the most recent story of me becoming like a total fanboy.
Okay.
Was I was in Atlanta a couple weeks ago, like working, mm-hmm. and I went with Irv Gotti, uh-huh. who was directing this thing, the show I'm in called Tales. Yeah.
Okay.
He took us all to Magic City, like on our first night
nice.
There.
I saw that.
On a Monday.
Yeah.
On a Monday.
It's the best night.
Yeah.
Monday is the best night at Magic City. Yeah.
So he took us there on Monday, and on the way out, we're walking out, and Gucci is walking in.
Gua.
Yeah. And Gucci's like, hey, yo, what's up, Irv? Like, hey, Irv. So he starts talking to Irv, and I'm standing right there like this, like
in the middle,
I froze up.
So you decide to fanboy over Gucci Man.
Well, Well, that's what happened. I didn't decide, but that's what happened.
Got you.
If I had decided, I would have like tried to be like more cool, but I like uh-huh. totally fanboyed out, mm-hmm. and I was like, yo, like when Irv was like, I was just standing there like this, and then when Irv was like, yo, this is Chet Hanks, I was like this. It's an honor to meet you. I was like, yo, it's an honor to meet you.
What did he say?
He went like this. He was like this.
This is the thing I'm trying to understand, and I know the fans are going to go after me. Is like, motherfucker, how you supposed to be in hip-hop? You don't know. Why are so many people crazy for Gucci Mane? I mean, I really don't know.
He's a legend.
Right.
He's a legend.
I will agree.
And, you know, like, he's kind of like the father of, like current trap music.
Today. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that might be.
Well, very well played.
I know his music.
Him and Zaytoven really started, like, the whole style today.
Mm. So he knows research.
And I've been listening to Gucci since, you know, like.
Since he was fat.
You know, since hey buddy, know me. You know?
Hey,
I don't remember
my kitchen. Like,
I don't remember that song, but I did meet Gucci at Ace's strip club in New York. I did a quick photo bomb because I just said hi. He's a really nice guy though, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I took my little photo bomb and I kept it pushing. Okay, so speaking of hip hop, I was watching Wendy Williams one day, who you've had a lot to say about and who's had a lot to say about you.
Oh, you too.
And she had talked about you wanting to get on Love and Hip Hop. What would you do Love and Hip Hop?
All right, let me clear this up. One night I was watching, I was flipping the channels and Love and Hip Hop Atlanta was on
mm-hmm.
and I was watching it for a second and I was like, man, this is so funny. Like, it's so funny. It's like people are like so like over the top, like extra.
It's like a soap opera.
Yeah. And I was like, I was watching it from like a production standpoint mm-hmm. because like I'm imagining like how they make the show.
Yeah.
And I was like, when they do the interviews with people, like the confessionals.
Yeah.
And they're all talking with their hands like,
big
and I don't know what she was saying. She came in the spot and she was like, oh, hell no. So I was like,
I hate this shit.
So I was imagining it and I'm like, I get why they do that. It's because they have a producer off screen who's like, they're just talking normally. And then they're like, yeah, but you know what? Can you just do it more time? Like, do a little bit more animated.
Yeah.
Use your hands a little more.
Mm-mm.
So they're like, oh, okay, fuck. Like, yeah, so she came in and I was like, I don't know what. So I was like, I started thinking, I was like, what if like someone went on the show, but like completely ignored like all like the production directions
yeah.
and just like behaved like completely normally.
Well, let me tell you how they do it. So Treva, shout out to Treva. She's sitting there in the cut saying, you know, try it again this way. And they have you do it so many times that when they do cut it up, you do look fucking crazy. Because when I saw my first green screen, I was like, let me tell you what I think. And I don't even talk like that, right?
Yeah,
so when fans run up to me and they're reenacted, I'm like, bruh, I ain't even feeling this conversation right now. But you would never do Love and Hip Hop.
No, I'd never do Love and Hip Hop. And that's like no shade about Love and Hip Hop, because this is the reason. It all depends on your brand and what it is you do.
Mm-hmm.
If depending on your brand, it can be a positive thing for you.
Yeah.
You know, it could be a good move for you.
Right.
Like for me, I'm an actor. So for an actor, like a professional actor that does, you know, like scripted series, films and TV, mm-hmm. it doesn't make sense for me to do a reality show. It just doesn't.
So when you went on Instagram, talking about, you know, come, let me come on the show. You was being funny.
Yeah, I was being satirical and sarcastic.
Gotcha. Satirical. Did you hear that?
I know. I was going to be like, Gio, take notes.
I act a fool on my Instagram. You know, like, I'm clowning around like 90% of the time.
Now, you acting a fool on your Instagram. Yeah. Has that held you back from getting auditions or roles?
Well, let me, like, back in the day, I was acting a fool because I was a fool. Now I'm acting a fool because I'm playing around, but I'm not going too far.
You seem different.
Wait, so when you when you say that Valentine's Day is a difficult holiday because there's too many hoes, is that you being funny, or do you really feel like it's a whole holiday that could break your bank?
Well, that is funny, and it's also true.
Yeah.
Because if you do have a lot of hoes, I'm not saying I do.
Lies.
But if you do have a lot of hoes, then Valentine's Day is the most stressful day of the year.
Yeah.
And then when you had the guns on Instagram and Howard Stern was hiding for his life because he was in fear, was that comedy or was that I really want to shoot him up?
Oh, well, I don't think I definitely held up guns on Instagram, but I didn't like at Howard Stern or anything. But like those were like two separate things. But
were they real guns? Or was
they
it
were
the
real
Bow,
guns.
Bow Wow, no Bow Wow challenge.
Oh, no, they were real guns.
Gotcha.
They weren't my guns. They were my homie Josh's guns. He's got a ton of guns.
Real for that, dog. Because no one was going to be like, yeah, I like that. That's dope.
Yeah.
I guess people are like, having a difficult time separating, you know, the fuckery from
the
before,
real.
From you now adopting this kind of stance where you're making a parody of your former self, kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? It's true, and that's why I wanted to come up here.
Yeah,
because there's so much out there of fuckery, you know, with me participating in.
Isn't
fuckery.
That a great word, fuckery?
Yeah,
like almost like how James Franco was in Spring Breakers making fun of Riff Raff.
Yeah. Well, there's so much out there from that time, and so I wanted to come up here because, you know, this is the bottom line. I'm sober now. Mm. I've been sober for like 2 years.
Wow. Oh, congratulations. That's hard. Yeah. I can't stay away from wine for a day.
Next month will be 2 years.
So were you drinking? Were you doing drugs or doing a combination of?
I was doing a hell of a lot of drinking and drugs.
Okay. Cocaine drugs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
So what made you decide to go sober? Was there an intervention? Because what I told our group was we aren't as necessarily interested in talking about your parents because we all know you're Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson's son, which by the way, I love both.
Right. Mm.
We're not
shout out.
Yeah. You know, we want to, I think you're fascinating. I think the fact that,
thank you.
That your upbringing, where you've come from, what you've gone through. Like, I really like the fact that this show allows people to kind of see themselves in our guest. And I know for me, I struggle with alcohol. I still struggle with alcohol. Mm-hmm. I went sober for 2.5 years. And I started drinking after my brother died. So then I did an event with Whitney Houston and she died the next day. Now that made me go sober for 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly I'm back on the train.
Mm-hmm.
What was the thing that made you decide to just go completely sober?
Well, it was my daughter. Mm-hmm. It was finding out that I was going to be a father. But apart from that, I had just completely ran my life into the ground. You know, mm-hmm. I just got to a point where I was like, yo, me doing things my way has ran my life into the ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, and this is, I don't want to go on this way anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go on this way anymore. And I was in that place, very dark place, when I found out that I was going to be a father. So it was like, you know, it was honestly, I really believe that if it wasn't for my daughter, that I may never have made that change. You know, I could be dead or in jail because she really saved my life because it was at the point where I didn't give a fuck about myself anymore.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I didn't give a fuck what happened to me. You know, I was beyond that. So it really needed something beyond myself to motivate me to make the change. And it was my daughter. You know,
so when you were having the burnout or you were doing all the crazy things, were your parents trying to reach you though?
Oh yeah.
And were you not able to hear that?
They were trying to reach me. I wasn't in communication with them because I had so much anger and resentment towards them.
Wow. Really?
You know what I mean? Really?
So they tried. They really tried. But, you know, like they wanted me to get better, but I didn't want myself to get better. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So when someone is trying to, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
So you say you had so much anger and resentment towards your parents. Why?
Man, that's a, you know, like there's no easy answer to that question, but it's not, but The truth is, it wasn't anger and resentment towards them. It was just easy for me at the time to be angry and resentment towards everybody yeah. other than myself.
The right. wisdom that
because the truth was, I was angry and resentful at myself.
Yeah,
I hated myself. But like an addict, like when you're in your disease and when you're in your addiction, you blame everything and everybody except yeah. for yourself.
Yeah. Well, it's yeah. funny because my mother was actually she was a drug addict. She was addicted to cocaine, heroin, and alcohol. And so I grew up in the foster care system. So I had a lot of resentment. I mean, like it was, even when she was dying in the hospital, it was hard for me to forgive her. Cause I'm like, I felt like I had a reason to be mad. But I mean, of course, retrospect, looking back and having gone through all the processing of it all, you kind of look at it like, okay, shit, you decide to be happy or unhappy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not anybody else's reason why you're that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But most people would look at you and say, okay, well, he was a silver spoon kid. He grew up wealthy. I mean, I fell in love with your father jumping up and down on the damn big toys.
I mean, exactly. We just have to address the fact of who your father is. I mean, Tom Hanks is literally my favorite actor.
Yeah, my like, girl he got could, a big crush on
he,
him.
Crush
He's a married
Gio,
man.
Gio, for fuck's sakes.
Everybody has a crush on somebody. She has a crush on him.
Oh my God. Anyways.
You don't ever really meet someone who's like, nah, fuck Tom Hanks.
Right, exactly.
No. Right. You know, when you think of Tom Hanks, you definitely think of
you
like.
You don't think mess.
Okay.
You think dad.
He's going to heaven.
You think dad. You think awesome. You know, this is the guy I would love to be raised by.
And that's all accurate.
Yeah.
That's all accurate.
I mean,
that's the truth.
You can't.
He's a great dad.
Yeah.
And my mom is a great mom.
Exactly. Like, and Rita Wilson, I'm also like a huge. Yeah. I was just watching her episode of Law and Order SVU where she had a young son who was kind of fucking up. Anyways, we're just going to skate right over that.
Funny how art imitates life sometimes.
Man, say that again.
Art imitates life.
We need to get Chad a check for that episode.
Get me on the back end.
Definitely have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, you seem wise beyond your years. And it seems
Thank you so much.
It really seems like, you know, when people come out of that cloud of addiction, that they see life in so much more of a clearer fashion than just the average person. But, you know, I'm just wondering, like, as a child of, like, you know, how nepotism kind of went the wrong way for you. Did you, like, kind of at one point resent the level of success that was kind of, like, imposed upon you?
This
like,
is a great question.
You're Tom Hanks's son. It is expected of you to be, and Rita Wilson's son, you're expected to be as great as they are. Yeah. That's a heavy burden.
Well, this is, this is really interesting. I didn't know if you guys wanted to get into this, but I'd love to.
We try to follow where the guest wants to go. If you want to go there, we're going
to
go there.
I'd love to go there. Yeah. Okay. I'd love to go there.
Yeah.
Because this is really interesting. There's no easy explanation to this. Mm-hmm. And I've been figuring it out my whole life. Mm-hmm. Of like, what, you know, like, how does this affect me? And for a long time, not even knowing that it did affect me because I have nothing else to compare it to. Mm-hmm, I just have my life. I don't know, you know. So looking back in retrospect now as an adult, I see, like, you know, how I've struggled, like, with things in my past. But at the time, going through it, not being aware that, like, I'm really, like, dealing with anything, it was just all very, like, cloudy and confusing. You know what I'm saying? Because of how this affected me. But here's the bottom line. when I was, like, this is like a good like anecdote to kind of express it. When I was like 13 or 14, me and my parents were in Washington, D.C., and we got the invitation to go to the White House. Mm-hmm. And it was when George Bush was president. So, we were in the White House, and we're not expecting like to meet him or anything, but like he comes, like the Secret Service comes, they clear out the hallway, they're like, the president's coming out. We're like, oh shit. So I'm 14.
Mm-hmm. Were you listening to trap music then?
Gucci, man. Back then I was listening to like Tupac and like the Beastie Boys.
Okay.
Close enough.
Yeah.
But so the president comes out and we meet him, and I'm 14, and you know, my mom goes, this is my son, you know, like yada, yada. And he looks right at me and he goes, hey, Chester, how does it feel to be a son of a famous father? Like, put me on the spot. And I was like, well, Mr. President, there's a lot of advantages, but sometimes it can be pretty awkward. Mm-hmm. And he said, that's a good answer. I think I know a little something about that.
That's a good little bush.
So basically, it's like this. It's like, I wouldn't change my circumstances for the world because there's so many advantages and opportunities to it. But at the same time, it can lead you up to the door, but you have to walk through the door. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, if you're not prepared to walk through the door, then it's going to burn you. Mm-hmm. You know
and
what I mean?
And you have to have equity to stay in the room. You know, like even if you get in the room, you have to have something that keeps you there.
Exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But to go like way back, my life, like growing up, felt like a paradox a lot of the time because there was this great divide between what everybody expected my life to be like. And how like I or and who I was versus like the reality. So basically it's like this, like the whole world like expected that I had this like very like privileged life, and I did have a privileged life, but they expected it to be like me like running around like this rich, like I didn't have a care in the world. I had like endless money and I could just like hang out by a swimming pool all day, like drinking mm-hmm. margaritas and I'm like whipping around like Rolls Royces mm-hmm. and shit, like partying in mansions. Like that's what they expected my life was. And it wasn't like that at all. Like there were kids that I grew up around that did live like that.
Mm-hmm. But you were on allowance.
But I wasn't. No, like, let me tell you something. Let me put it like this. Like where other kids like boom, 16th birthday. Like what you want? Benz, like Beamer.
Like Floyd Mayweather's like, daughter.
You just got your driver's permit.
Like Floyd is Floyd's our sponsors. Like his daughter had Drake and Future perform with this big old bash with a G-Wagon given
that's
to her.
That's dope.
Sounds good.
I would have liked to be there. You know?
next time.
But like
where's Chet's world?
Like it, I grew up with kids like that, you know, 16, like what you want? But me, it was like, yo, dad, can I get some money? He was like, yeah. Like, go wash my car. I'll give you $20.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like that. Like, it wasn't like that. Like, wow. I got, like and because my parents are, first of all, they're very smart and they're very modest and humble. Mm. So they were aware of the fact of, like, okay, like, if we raise this kid, like, the wrong way, like, it's all going to go bad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he's going to be in the public eye. He's going to have a lot of attention on him. And if we just, you know, give him things, then he's going to be spoiled. You know what I mean? So not only did they not spoil me, but they went to like far lengths to make sure like that I was like as normal as possible. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So like growing up, like I had it like harder than a lot of the kids like that, like whose parents like weren't like any
just
like
rich,
like or just not rich. Like you, your dad could be like a dentist or some shit. And like those kids were like balling out compared to me.
But then what do you think made you go left and get into drugs and alcohol and black girls and trap music? what made you go there? Because let me say this, because when I think of Forrest Gump and when I think of your mother, who I believe is just lovely, I don't think of Gucci Mane, black girls, cocaine grill. You have grills. You do have a grill.
Not right now.
Well, I got it made for the role that I was doing.
I thought she was coming out with an album. I'm like, okay.
Well, I did have grills for the role that I was doing. I went out and made a grill for the character that I was doing, which I want to get into.
Okay.
But at the same time, I was really just an excuse because I've always wanted grills.
I got a good grill guy. So how did you go left? If they were normalizing your upbring and how did you go left?
Check this out. This is another part of the paradox that I'm talking about. Growing up, everybody, everywhere I went, you know, like, you know, different schools, you know, high school, you know, college, whatever. It was always like, it was never like this. Oh, that's Tom Hanks' son. Oh, like, I'm going to go kiss his ass. Like, I want to go be friends with him. It was the opposite. It was like, oh,
I'm gonna fuck with him.
That's Tom Hanks' son. It was like, fuck that guy. I bet he thinks he's so fucking cool. He thinks he's like, he's such hot shit because of who his dad is. Fuck him. You know what I mean? That was the attitude towards me. Everywhere I went. So that led to me developing a chip on my shoulder because I didn't think I was cool. I wanted you to like me. I just wanted to make friends. Like, I didn't think I was cool. Like, I didn't think I was hot shit. Like, I wanted to be, you know, just like anyone else. You know what I mean? So I dealt with all this negative energy surrounding me. And it's like everywhere I went, people weren't getting to know me. It's like, oh, who are you? You're Chet? Okay, what's up? What's up, Chet? It was like, oh, yeah, well, I know who you are. You know what I mean? So that was the energy surrounding me my whole life. And I didn't get it. Like, I didn't understand why. Mm-hmm. All right? So that led to me, like, people fucking with me. Not in a good way. Mm-hmm. Not like I fuck with you, you know? Mm-hmm. But like fucking with me. So that led to me developing like a real chip on my shoulder. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like a real chip on my shoulder where it's like to like basically like get people to like stop trying to punk me. You know what I mean? Like, I would rather be in, I would rather make myself intimidating than make myself friendly.
Yeah.
Because when I made myself friendly, people mistook my kindness for weakness and they try to punk me. You know what I mean? Like for real. Like, I know I went to private school and shit, but like, we got in fights shit and shit too. Like, shit happened too, you know?
But you also have a degree. You went to Northwestern, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're smart as fuck. That's why that big word you used a long time ago that I already forgot.
Satirical.
That probably made Melissa wet over there.
She's
the dictionary thesaurus all in one.
No, because, first of all, talking to the mic, we're on the radio. But when you walked in the, when you walked in the building, she saw you through the glass. I saw you check out his body. We're going to get to him working out the gym. Listen, we all know you're down with the swirl, and we know he's down with black women. So the daughter that you had by your baby mom.
Hold on.
The daughter that you had with the black woman, was that a planned
pregnancy?
Pregnancy, or did that happen on accident?
No, it wasn't a plan. It wasn't a plan.
So it was a blessing out of nowhere.
Blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
So with all of everything that's coming out in the media, the names, Jigaboo, Negroid, how does that make you feel? How did that make you feel?
Oh, man, I don't pay any attention to that. I don't pay any attention to that.
I wouldn't say that they were necessarily like all over the place. They were like on some really obscure bullshit racist fucking WordPress sites.
There's always
going to
be like there's always going to be parasites out there.
I mean, you're looking at two people who like, you know, are half black and half white. So, you know, like you choose to like, you know, hear it or ignore it, you know. So, I mean,
I learned very early on, like when I first started, like I learned very early on when I started like, you know, like being like in the public eye to have thick skin and just not let that affect me because even if you get angry about it, then you're allowing them to breach your inner peace.
Right.
You literally if you even have any type of emotion about it, then they've already breached your inner peace. And you just have to accept that that's part of the world. There's always going to be sick, parasitic people out there in the world that are just like peasants of the soul, peasants of the mind.
You must have had a really good therapist.
So when you were on your rants and doing all of your crazy things, what were the phone calls from your family like? Were they like, okay, Chet, you need to relax? Or was it just like,
stop drinking the jungle juice?
It was like, Chet, like, what are you doing? Like, you are fucking up. Like, just stop. Like, stop. Like, you cannot win this. Like, you cannot like fight your way out of this. Like, just stop. And I was just like, I wasn't even trying to hear it because I didn't even have a relationship with my family at that point.
When you were having all the issues and things that were going on, did you have real good friends around you, or were you pretty much just out by yourself burning out?
I've always had my real good friends in my life. Always have my real good friends in my life. But at that, like, that, there were times when my friends were like, yo, dude, like, what are you doing, man? Like, what are you doing? Like, they said that to me, but I also had a bunch of bullshit ass people in my life that I was like going out of my way to kick it with. And that's what like drug culture does to you. You know what I mean? Like that when you're on drugs, that's what happens. You end up surrounding yourself with other people who are sick. You know what I mean? And misery loves company because you're all like got the same mission, which is just to get high and get high together. So it's like you pull your resources together so you can accomplish that objective of getting high. And you know, the outcome is that you're just surrounding yourself with a bunch of really sick people.
And the reason why I asked the question is because earlier we had talked about Chris Brown and kind of knowing Chris from back in the day to where he is now. The Chris that I used to know is gone. Like, the Chris now is surrounded by a lot of people that I feel keep him in that place because they need him to keep that thing going. I could see somebody like you having people around for like what you just said to like kind of keep, you know, to bring your resources together. So like for somebody like a Chris Brown that's had those troubles and having come out of that yourself, what advice would you have for him?
I don't have any advice for Chris Brown. I couldn't tell him shit. I can't tell Chris Breezy shit. I mean, he's a GOAT, man. So yeah, I mean.
But some of the greatest have died at 27 years old. Janis Joplin.
Jimi Hendrix.
I don't know anything. I don't know anything about Chris Brown's life, but I'm sure that he has the wherewithal to keep himself, you know, good. No matter what.
So. Okay, so not to personalize it for Chris, for anybody out there who may have been in your situation and wants to get through it to where you are now, what advice would you give them?
For anybody who would like it was in my situation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. With a drug addiction or alcohol addiction.
Well, there are certain things you have to do if you want to like change your life.
Yeah.
And get sober and stay sober. There's certain things you have to do.
Yeah.
Getting rid of those toxic friends is one of them. Yeah. It's a must.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
The other thing is you gotta have a spiritual life.
Right.
You have to talk to God.
Mm-hmm.
You have to basically turn your will over to God's will.
I love that.
That's the bottom line.
Well, speaking of positive influences in your life, you know, I'm also as much of a fan of your mom and your dad. I'm also a really big fan of your brother, Colin. First time I was ever really like introduced as to who he was on my favorite TV show, Dexter, playing a serial killer. So like he won my heart. What's your relationship like with Colin? Are you guys, you know, super close?
Yeah.
How did he help you, or, you know, what role did he play when you were at your most troubled?
He would just let me know that he was there for me.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't try to judge me or tell me what to do. He was really nice. Yeah. He's a great guy. He just let me know that he was there for me.
Right.
So who's older and who's younger?
Colin's older.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah.
So your mother, she's a cancer survivor.
Yeah.
How did you find out about that, and what impact did it have on you? Were you in the space, mental space, to be able to handle that or process it?
I don't know, man. I'd rather not talk about that.
Okay.
That's understandable.
Yeah. She's good now, and I thank God. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's all good, and I thank God. You know what I mean?
No, we're definitely happy. I mean, I read online that she was doing better.
Right.
What lessons do you have for your daughter?
How old is she right now? How old is she now?
She's like a year and a half.
A year and a half. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So get ready, because I got a 14-year-old daughter. So that's a whole different ballpark.
Yeah.
So what life lessons do you have?
Oh, why don't you give me some game? I realize that, like, as far as like doing drugs, and when you get older, you know, you get like a teenager and you start getting curious about like alcohol and like smoking weed and shit. I kind of feel like if you are like really try to force someone to not do that, it makes it more appealing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not gonna like project the fact that like I'm like a drug addict like onto her, as if like, oh, if she does it, then she's gonna be like me. I mean, like that's possible because like it's like it's a genetic thing, but you know what I mean? Like I kind of plan on just like letting her know like, yo, like just like be honest. You know what I mean? Like I'm here. Like, just, you don't gotta keep secrets from me.
Mm-hmm,
you know what I mean? Like, you're not gonna get in trouble. There has to be communication, because if you feel like you're going to get in trouble if like you tell your parents something, then you're just going to, you know, try to hide
keep
that
it from
shit.
Them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how are you going to normalize fame or just recognition from the press with her? And were you prepared for it? Like, was there any process where you were told or trained on how to deal with it? Mm. People want to talk about you because of who you are.
Yeah. It's crazy. I really wasn't trained. I was just like, my parents were just like, yo, stay out of it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And when the first time I was in the public eye was like, really, like the first time I was really in the public eye was like 2010. And it was when I put out like a song called like White and Purple. And it was like a remix of like Wiz Khalifa's Black and Yellow. And it was about like my college. Like, mm-hmm. It was about like going to college parties. Like, it was literally a song that I made like just to play like at our college parties,
mm-hmm.
period. And like, I put it out and like it went viral. Mm-hmm. And I was not expecting that.
Mm-hmm. Did you understand why?
Yeah, I understood why, but I didn't anticipate that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But when it happened, I understood why. But this is what I didn't understand. Like, why people like could not wrap their heads around the fact that like I was rapping.
Right.
It was, mm-hmm. like people couldn't wrap their heads around that. Like, how could Tom Hanks's son, like a rich like white kid, have the audacity to like rap bars? You know what I mean? It was like, how could he? But I wasn't like talking about anything, mm-hmm. that was like,
but I don't even
like,
think at that. I don't even think it's just Tom Hanks though. Mm-hmm. I think because I look at, we talked about clickbait earlier, mm-hmm. people that write stories with those fancy titles and make people click it. Anytime they want to take a jab at you or talk about you, they'll put Tom Hanks as the first two words. So everybody clicks it to see what the fuck is going on.
Yeah.
And what I love about Chet now, and just from what I've seen, even if you do the research, you've been doing your own thing. You don't hijack the name or the family and put that in front of who you are. I've never seen anything where you've done that. So what I think is not just the Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson. Mm-hmm. I think it's the fact that if you are white and you have an appreciation for urban culture or hip hop mm-hmm. music or anything, because even when Eminem came out and yes. was seriously rapping, yeah. he was tested. Now yes. he's the greatest,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Do you think it's, because I think where you were talking about earlier with the racism and the stuff that we found mm-hmm. online, mm-hmm. do you think it's just that people don't want to, they have a hard time legitimizing somebody who's not black that wants to rap?
I don't think it's that I don't think in my case, I don't think it was so much about race as it was about class.
Class. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Because there are plenty of white rappers, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like that's not a big deal. And yeah. And even now it's like, even now, like the culture of rap or hip hop or whatever you want to call it is, it includes every race. Like mm-hmm. with the kids now, like the 17, 18 year old kids now, it's every race. Like
mm-hmm.
it's not about class either. It's not about like, you know, whether you grew up in the hood or not. Mm-hmm. It's all races, all classes. That's what hip hop is now. That's what the culture is yeah. now. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you hear like Migos talk about culture because that's what it is. This is the culture mm-hmm. and it's American culture. Mm-hmm. It's not yeah. just like rap culture now. Yeah. Like it's American culture. It's mainstream American culture now.
So you say that you bring up culture. Speaking on the current events right now, you know, we got the Bill Maher situation with the house nigga. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that term he used, do you still feel like you're okay to say the word nigga?
Well, you've been criticized for using it
yeah.
before.
No, I don't. And at the time, you know, I had like my explanations for it. And my explanations at the time was basically, oh, you know, I mean, like there's plenty of like a white people, like people that aren't black that use the word. Mm-hmm. And my black friends use it with me. I use it at them. That mm-hmm. was my explanation at the yes. time. But I was on, you know, I was on a lot of drugs. I didn't give a fuck. I was like very comfortable being reckless because that's kind of what I made my identity to be. I made my identity into this like reckless guy who doesn't give a fuck because of this massive chip on my shoulder mm-hmm. where it was like I had already been villainized like in the media, so I basically ran with it and mm-hmm. said, okay, fuck it. If you want to make me a villain, like I'll be like the biggest villain and like mm-hmm. whatever, and I'll get a fan base from like being that villain. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here's the truth. It was never my place to speak on that. Mm-hmm. It was never my place to speak on that. Because even though like actually when it happened, like there's a lot of people that were like, yo, like that's all right. Like we ain't tripping off that. Like Chet's cool. Even though like there was a lot of people like that, the truth is, it's like you got to think about like the people from like the past generations, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like grandmothers. It's like it's never gonna be cool with that, and that therefore it makes it like not okay. It was never my place to speak on that.
So let's talk about the project that you're working on right now in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. So I saw that you were in Atlanta. I saw you went to Magic City on Instagram. I thought maybe you were going there to find, you know, because you love black women. There's a lot of black women in Magic City.
I do. Swear.
So let's talk about the project. How did you get introduced to this opportunity? And do you feel the pressure of acting, you know, because of who your parents are?
Well, yeah, that's dope. Yeah. I got the role just from auditioning for it. You know, it was just like that's how I've gotten every roles. Like I'm not at the point yet where people are just like offering me roles without me having to read. Like I still got to go and I still got to audition for it. So that's how I got the role. As far as pressure goes, yeah, I do feel a lot of pressure. I do feel a lot of pressure because, you know, like people are, I'm under a microscope, you know what I'm saying? So it's and that's how I feel like in regards to a lot of the things, because like, not only like, am I being judged as an actor compared to my dad, but you know, when you come from a place of privilege, people are always going to say like, oh, like whatever, everything you get,
you didn't earn it yourself.
You didn't get it for yourself. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, like fuck you. Like, so you got to work twice as hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to work twice as hard to prove to people, no, like I am worthy of this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't handed to me. I am worthy of this. And that's the truth because I've worked for everything I have. Mm-hmm. And my parents have never given me money. Like I support myself completely on my own.
So for people who aren't really familiar with the Tales project, you know, it's Irv Gotti's project where he takes classic songs and creates a three-part narrative, you know, so like fuck the police. What can you tell us, what song is, you know, part of the storyline that you're
okay,
involved
well,
in?
Yeah, so each episode mm-hmm. is a different song.
Yeah.
So each episode is a different cast.
Yeah.
So my episode is fuck the police.
Okay.
And it's the season premiere.
Okay.
The other, they also got like Trap Queen is one of the episodes. Uh-huh. A Children's Story by Slick Rick is one of the episodes. And I can't remember the other ones, but mine's the season premiere. It comes out June 27th,
mm-hmm.
and it's like 2 hours long, And we're doing NWA's Fuck the Police.
Shout out Nafisa Williams.
Yeah, shout out Nafisa Williams, my bro Matt Noska, mm-hmm. my cast mates, everyone. It was like an incredible experience, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It was really like one of the most incredible work experiences I've ever had.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Shout out Irv. Yeah.
So you've never really done an extensive sit down. So what I just want to know, what do you think the biggest misconception of Chet Hanks is?
Mm.
That was deep.
Hmm. Yeah, think about
it. Well, because if you look at everything that you've said or been said about you, I feel like when you say or do things that are funny, or when you were on drugs and alcohol, it becomes a headline. Then you go on the defense and you go jugular, which I ain't gonna lie, sober or not, I respected it because I understand it, you know, yeah. And like you, but you don't really, I've never really seen anything that really describes you from your own perspective. You know, it's like these narratives of people they say about you, you know? So you should do Love and Hip Hop, by the way. what do you think the biggest misconception is?
There's a lot of misconceptions about me, you know, as far as the biggest one, I don't know.
Any.
Well, there's a lot of misconceptions, you know, that I'm like, you know, like that I've kind of touched on, you know, that I've like this like Richie Rich kid who like has this crazy lifestyle, or that I'm like this like wannabe thug, you know what I mean? And you know, all these things, you know, and at sometimes, you know, I can only blame myself, because sometimes I've carried myself in a way to validate those misconceptions, you know what I'm saying? But the truth is, I'm just a real dude, you know what I mean? I'm real, you know what I mean?
So when you penned that open letter, it was a couple of years ago, I think. Was that the beginning of this new transition to the person you are now?
What was that open letter?
On Instagram, where you posted about kind of reconciling things in your life and kind of getting rid of the bad things and moving forward and being positive and sober. And then you even talked about God, I think, in that post.
It was where you were talking about, like, you needed to take time to figure out your life, the absence that you'd had on social media.
Yeah.
You know, and so you'd come back and you were basically explaining your absence and, you know, just personal revelations that you had. That's what Jason's referring to.
Yeah. Well, I think that was, like, right around the time I went off to get clean. But I still haven't, like, but it, let me put it like this. Like, next month, like I said, it'll be 2 years sober for me.
Nice.
The first year is like just like getting clean, like, okay, like, you know what I mean, like trying to like shed like all the bullshit and just focus on like how can I just stay sober, you know what I mean? Then when you get in a habit of that and you're like, okay, like I feel like I got a handle on this, then the second year is like, okay, like now, like how do I begin the process of like finding peace, you know what I mean, like finding real peace, because like that inner peace, that's like something I never had, even like before, even when like growing up, and before I started using drugs, it was just like, you know what I mean? I always felt like ill at ease, you know what I mean? And that once I started getting older, you know, drugs, you know, worked perfectly, because it allowed me to, you know, like channel that ill at ease
and forget
about it and escape from that. But you know, we all know how that goes. So when you get sober, it's like when you get some time under your belt, it's like, okay, like how can I sit with myself and figure out like what practices I need to implement in my life that are gonna allow me to have peace? You know what I mean? And that's what I'm on now. And I thank God so much, because I finally feel that's starting to happen for me. I'm finally starting to find that peace, and I look forward to the future now, because every day that goes by, I feel like I'm getting more of it.
So you could say, did you really, like, you found God? Did you get, like, baptized again? Did you rededicate your life to Christ? Did you?
But the tricky thing about me is that even when I was, like, a really, like, in the depths of like, drugs, like, I still had a connection with God. Mm. I've always had a real, like, I've always had the knowledge that God is real. Like, people ask me, like, do you believe in God? And I say, no, I don't believe in God. Because to believe in God implies that there's room for disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
I simply am aware of God. I'm aware of his existence, of the reality of God. You know what I'm saying? So I had that even when I was on drugs. And the tricky part was, because sometimes drugs would, like, I use drugs to try to like strengthen my connection with him, because I get high and I feel closer to God.
I hear a lot of people say, you know, that, I mean? Same thing.
Especially like on hallucinogenics, you know, like acid and mushrooms and shit like that. You know what I'm saying? So, but the thing is, looking back on it, is that I believed in God, but I had no faith in God. Wow. I knew I had awareness of God, but I didn't have any faith in him. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Because I didn't have the faith that he was going to be able to take care of me and take care of my life. Mm. That's why I always thought I had to do everything.
So you found yourself being mad at him a lot. Did you ever find yourself literally like, I've been at a point where I've cursed him out. Saying no. Why?
I've never been mad at God. I've just been mad at myself.
So do you feel like sobriety is what helped you get a closer connection? Because I have a friend, I'm not going to say his name, but when I was really out there, because I'm out there now, but I mean, I used to be way out there. I'm probably not as out there as I wasn't doing shrooms. If I did a fucking shroom, I would level Hollywood. They would fucking kill
you
me.
You would.
No, they would fucking kill me.
I was always so grateful you didn't do drugs.
If I get mushroom, cocaine, and Instagram, and Twitter, oh, it's over. Floyd Mayweather, everybody going to kill me. I'm out.
Hollywood's going to be locked.
Hollywood, I'm going to have to move back to Stockton because niggas going to be trying to get me.
Stockton unlocked.
Do you feel that... Because I had a friend who used to always say to me when I was in the middle of my storm, like, yo, bro, you need to get with God. I'm like, I pray every day. I literally will drive down the street and randomly just thank God that I made it
today. Listen to gospel music
I listen to The Storm Is Over Now by Kirk Franklin before I got here. Shout out to his little short ass. But no, I mean, I had to distance myself from him because I felt like he was projecting this perception that I had somehow been disconnected to God because I was going through my trial, you know, and I feel like we all go through a trial, some bigger than others. But do you feel like the sobriety was able to give you like the mental clarity to get deeper connected to him, or what was that journey? Because you sound completely different than.
Yes, you do, bro. It's two different people right
now. Thank you. Thank you. Sobriety has allowed me to relinquish my will to God.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Because as I said before, even then I still knew God was real, but I was doing all these toxic, fucked up things in my life that was just sabotaging myself. Mm-hmm. That was just sabotaging my life because I was living completely in my own will. And my own will was like, I want to get high. I want to do this. I want to do this. So I was just living my life in my own will. And so now I knowing that like there are things that I had to change. Like on a daily basis, I have to remind myself like, yo, like, let me try to like turn my will over to God. Let me just try to listen and see what he wants me to do next, not what I want to do next. Mm-hmm. And I still, and I fail all the time. I fail all the time, but it's like a daily, you know what I'm saying? It's a daily practice. It's a daily practice. And the more you practice it, the more peace I have.
I know you and Wendy have had your moments. Would you ever go on the Wendy Williams show?
Well,
I'm gonna email this.
Like I'm like, you know, it's funny because like a bunch of people have been like telling me like on Instagram, be like, go on Wendy.
I would love to see you go on because go on Wendy. Because I think she would expect you to be one way as a lot of people have, and I think you would come on there and just completely surprise her.
Yeah.
Well, I would hope so. I think that I would, but I'm a little hesitant because sometimes like it kind of seems like that show is like her whole audience is just gonna like. Gonna be prompted to like do whatever like she tells them to do.
Tell you something. I've done Wendy's show and she can be diffused. I'm a fan. I love her.
Yeah.
But she can be diffused and I could see that happening with you. Like when you, she likes to be surprised mm-hmm. because she thinks that she has seen it all. You know, she is a veteran in this business. She's seen it all. She's been through it all. So she is very rarely surprised and you are quite shockingly, they're just completely just aware and introspective, you know, and an enjoyable interview.
And I'll be honest with you, he didn't have a publicist call me. Mm-hmm. He didn't ask me all the questions and say, don't talk about this and that. That's why I think it's been a little all over the place because we don't want to, you know, we want to go where you want to go. And I think what she'll find is that you being as open, and I really feel like when you live in your truth and people get a lot of criticism, I say some of the craziest shit and do some of the craziest things.
See?
But you know what though? No matter whether I'm standing next to Floyd Mayweather or I'm next to
Oprah,
or I'm in West Hollywood with all the homosexuals, people respect the fact that I am just authentically me. And I feel talking to you just today, like I really feel like you haven't ran from a question. You haven't. Yeah. I mean, I feel like you're just really being real. Mm-hmm. She can't hate that.
Yeah.
I think what she does good is she does do those little jabs to try to throw you off. But if you focus, I would love to see you on Wendy.
Yeah. And just a double dutch back in there, man, just to pick
double dutch was a game for girls.
No, actually, bro. Actually,
you said
bro,
no gay geo stuff during this.
Does
interview.
Double dutch very well. Listen, just to pick about what he said, speaking with you now, we know who you are. We know who you're the you know the spawn from. I don't feel like
spawn.
That
you, the spawn. I'm sorry.
I spawned from. I spawned from, which means I came from. I just feel like I'm talking to
progeny,
a cool ass
motherfucker
dude.
Is the word you're looking for.
A cool ass dude that I met, motherfucker, at Beverly Center, and we had a few drinks at the Dime Bar, and that's good, man. So God bless you and everything
Red
you do.
Bull. Thank you for
thanks for coming, Spawn.
And thanks for and Gio, thanks for letting your six fans online know that you've met Chad before I brought him to the show.
You look like a UPS truck.
But that's okay. And oh if it's a God. Full of bunch of bottom homosexuals, you'd be right there to take them.
Listen,
all right, so
we
look,
know your
Chet,
go-to.
Chet, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for
thank
trusting
you.
Us.
Thank you so much
and,
for coming by.
Out.
Thank you, guys.
God bless you.
Let's just jump right into the week in recap, starting with you, Miss Melissa Ford.
I was in Vegas, you know, having a...
Gallivanting.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I don't appreciate that the way I found out you were going to Vegas was a jet photo posted to Claudia Jordan's Instagram, who I didn't know was now your new BFF. This is what's...
I like
this,
that. I'm happy for
well,
that.
I don't know how... Well, I don't know what to feel about it because, you know, their relationship is just like a roller coaster at fucking Magic Mountain.
Okay. Well, you were watching my Snapchat, so you probably saw it there first.
Yes. No, I saw it on Claudia Jordan's Instagram first.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. Then I started doing my research.
Yeah. Okay. I was watching too. I was researching too.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, Claudia's cool. We do have like a little bit of a history that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I feel like part of the reason why we've, you know, had downs is because there's, you know, been other people's interaction.
Yeah,
and
but then, that
but
was...
No, but then I'll also say that she did need to mature a little bit. I will definitely say she definitely needed to mature a little bit.
I feel this fight coming on again.
No, and she... And Hollywood has just a way of like, you know, just, I don't know, just not, getting the worst out of people.
Okay, but my concern doesn't lie where you and Claudia Jordan get along, because I really don't give a fuck about that.
Okay,
the more you guys fight, the more Hollywood Unlocked has content.
Okay, but I do want to know.
No, wait, hold on. No, when I see a jet.
Yeah, I was...
Because, see, once the jet photo got posted, I timed that motherfucker, and it was about 55 minutes until you posted. So I said, okay, that's a Vegas flight. Because if you were flying East Coast, the shit wouldn't have been able to post all the way.
Shit.
So then I'm like, okay, well, let me hit Floyd. Hey, Floyd, what's going on in Vegas this weekend? Did you, is Melissa coming out there? Nah, I ain't talking to Melissa. Okay, so Champ didn't send the flight.
Mm-hmm.
So now we got a problem because I'm not in the loop.
So I'm thinking pretty much in the back of my mind, that was a Claudia situation that set that up.
Possibly.
Uh-huh. I got that vibe.
I'm going to let Melissa live because I know all the real details.
But y'all look like y'all had a really good time.
We had a really...
I saw you getting dressed on your her live.
Yeah.
I watched.
And of course, we saw the ass photos from the pool.
Yes. Yes.
I looked.
Yes.
I tell you,
yes.
These Instagram thoughts, I tell you.
Listen, shut the fuck up, okay? Listen, I'm proud of my real assets,
yes.
Okay? I just want to remind everybody as to what a real ass looks like
stand
these
up and
days.
Show yes. Oh, yes.
Why does she need to stand up and show them when we have Instagram? Yes. We can see your ass all day. Sit your ass down.
Watch how many sit guys that ass that part right there.
Okay, well, listen. Welcome back from Vegas.
Thanks.
I hope that everything works out.
Yeah, me too.
Because he's actually pretty hot.
Did you get drunk? Did you get turned?
No, I did not.
Okay.
No. Sorry, she was at Dre's and you were drinking. I saw your Instagram.
I had a couple of cocktails, but I was also acting as security.
How good was the cocktail?
Drop the tail.
Anyway, welcome back. Yeah. Giovanni, thank what did you do that does not include a hook lounge?
I was just at home, you know, nothing, man.
Gio, you have to start getting out for good conversation.
You know what?
Because listen, I'm tired of your little six-member Gio army. Now you got an extra fucking follower. Somebody
now.
Got their grandma to get on her laptop. Here's the deal. I am tired of the fans saying, oh, he's just bragging and boasting about being with this celebrity.
Listen,
I'm sorry that my life is lit and you ain't you in the basement.
I could easily go and gallivant. I love that I'm learning new words. I can call up all these celebrities. I could do that, but I don't be doing shit, man. I be at home reading scripts.
Okay,
that's
listen,
what I really be
if
doing.
I'm going to sit here and do this show and smell this mic that smells like ass, I don't know what fucking
I really be at home
baboon was
reading
on this
scripts.
Mic before me.
I be at home like going over my impersonations, you know, going over sets. I host a lot of events, so I'm going over, you know, bullet points because it's always a heavy load of hosting shit. So,
so you're always working.
I'm always working,
listen,
man.
You just wanted to say heavy load. We know.
Oh, God.
But part of being in Hollywood is also getting out and networking. You got to get out.
Well,
there.
You know
how
what?
Do you think I get invited to so many fabulous
things? Well, the thing
things?
Is, I don't get, I mean, I get invited to a shitload of things.
That's a lie.
I do. I really do. I was invited to the documentary Chris Brown's premiere the other day.
And
I
you didn't go?
I chose not to go.
Why?
Because I was at home studying a script for a big audition that I have tomorrow. which is more important. You know, I love Chris. It's my boy. You know, but I'd rather be at home studying my craft to get where he is.
Okay. You know? You couldn't take like 2 hours?
But you see, the thing about it is...
My audition was 16 pages of sides.
The thing about it is you never know when you're out. An opportunity can arise while you're out. Somebody will see you and go, oh my God, I need you for this project.
Well, yeah, that's how I got this audition because I was out.
Okay, so you should have kept going out. Yeah. But, I mean, I really just want you to go out so I can start having a fair balance with our fans. Well, they can stop saying, stop showing out, Jason. No. I mean, like, you make me want to stay home.
No, amongst the three of us, we all have a plethora of connections and celebrity friends that we can...
Boy, stop it.
I love the effect that I'm having, the positive effect that I'm having on you.
Thank you.
But you should go traipse around town every once in a while.
I do. I just decided to stay at home last night and really just dive in.
Well, I mean, we could have talked about the Chris Brown documentary if you'd gone to the motherfucking screen.
Well, I saw the trailer like a year ago. Well, so
a year ago, when he was before he beat up his manager Mike G, who's a friend. Mm-hmm. I was trying to help them sell that documentary to STX Entertainment. We had a meeting, mm-hmm. presented. And they didn't, my friend Ryan at STX didn't want to buy it because he said it would have a hard time selling. I'm like, this is still Chris Brown. I don't care what anybody says. Chris has a lot of issues or has had a lot of significant moments in time that have not been positive, but he's still a superstar.
Yes.
And a fan base that's all over the world.
And at the end of the day, everyone loves a train wreck. We stop to watch the carnage. We stop to watch the blood and see if we can see body parts, you know, and this is obviously a figurative way of speaking. But because of all of his, you know, antics and, you know, brushes with the law, et cetera, he would be fascinating to watch.
But people are very critical of Hollywood Unlocked and they say, oh, you hating ass motherfucker, post good shit about Chris Brown. Listen, we post good. We post what's happening in the news that may not be good. But the thing about it is, this documentary focuses heavily on the moments surrounding Rihanna.
But
it really is. It is a trials of triumph kind of scenario. But the show itself does center around his relationships with Carucci, his relationship with Rihanna.
Did he approve this shit?
He created it with Rivington Entertainment.
Yeah, Rivington Entertainment. But the thing I love about this movie that's given him a platform is we never got a chance to hear Chris's side. Never.
Right.
And from the hashtags and the people posting it, they went, everybody said it's remarkable. It made people fall in love with him again. And that's why I applaud Lil Mama for taking that platform that she did and speaking up for him, because now I think this documentary coming out will help put a lot of things to bed and will help, forgive him.
Give the context as to how Lil Mama
Mama did an interview where she talked about and defended Chris Brown and his indiscretions and said that people need to let him live. But again, Lil Mama's known as being a stunt queen, and anytime she can have an opportunity to throw something out there to get on, she does it. I'm not saying that was her intentions.
Yeah,
I don't talk to the girl.
But she was talking the truth. I agree with 100%.
Yeah, a lot of people did and a lot of people didn't. But the thing about Chris in this documentary is that, you know, Chris, you know, I thought about this yesterday. As much as I used to really, really like Chris, he's not a person that I personally want to know anymore. Like, I don't want a relationship with him anymore. Because I feel like over the years, we all change. I've changed. Mm-hmm. He's changed. Mm-hmm. You've changed. Everybody changes. Mm-hmm. But I just feel like the Chris Brown that I knew, even at 19 and 20, going through the whole Rihanna thing, he's just so far gone from that now, you know?
I don't think so.
How not?
Let me tell you something. I remember when I interviewed Chris Brown, in like 2005 or 6 or something like that. And he was so bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and, look, a butterfly, you know? Like, I'm not fucking joking.
Yeah.
So, no, he's definitely gone through a massive metamorphosis. And remember when we saw him at Dre's?
Yeah.
He was bojangling it across the fucking stage. You know, he was dancing his ass off. But God, the physical change, there's no dispute the amount of.
And let's be clear, when we did the Trayvon Martin campaign, Chris was one of the few big celebrities to actually wear the shirt, promote the shirt, tweet and Facebook the shirt. Although his team did it, he still allowed it to happen. Mm-hmm. And so it took my thing, and what I'm saying isn't personal. I used to really like Chris Brown, and actually, because I come from a place where I've been judged for things that I've done in my past, I actually supported him. But I just think where I am right now in life, I am trying as much as this last show we did has created controversy to get drama out of my life. You know, just focus on my work And I just feel like his surroundings right now and the people around him are just not the people that I want to associate with.
I think when it comes to Chris, most people are just like, please don't end up like, you know, a lot of the greats have, like Jimi Hendrix, like Janis Joplin.
And he's around the same age.
He's 27, defense, yeah.
This last tour, party tour, I went to see him in Chicago. He wasn't drinking or smoking. Like I said, he sounded amazing. And I think his daughter, Royalty, because I have a daughter, I think that has had a positive effect
on his life. She is just a pretty, you know, I mean, pretty little.
I've seen him and I see that gleam in his eye that he had when he first came out. Like, well, he wants it again.
And to be fair, to the audience, I've talked to his baby mom, who was actually promised to interview with us. Mm-hmm. And she has a completely different perspective on how involved he is in her life. You and I aren't here to debate his relationship he has with his baby mom. She fucked him. She had the baby. That's their relationship. That's a fact. Mm. We can have our opinion as all the listeners do on the outside. But I'm just saying from what she said to me personally, and hopefully at some point soon she'll be here to explain it for herself, is that she has a different perspective. I want to be clear because people are going to say, oh, he's hating on Chris Brown. I used to really love Chris Brown, the person. Mm. And I really, as a friend at that time, felt like we all did. We wanted to protect him. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hopefully this movie does well for him. Hopefully Royalty is an inspiration in his life. And hopefully he continues to soar, because I don't want to see anything bad happen to Chris.
Yeah.
So, okay, this past week, first let me start by saying that I only have one apology for the last show. Mm-hmm. Only one apology. I never apologize for my opinions and my point of views, because they are my point of views. And I said this at one of our earlier shows, that now that I've really gotten into Hollywood Unlocked, I am so loyal to my brand, and my brand is about facts and truth. Mm-hmm. What it's not about is using the platform for personal attacks. So mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. only thing I apologize for is calling Amber Rose a bitch.
Right.
60% of our listeners are women.
Yeah.
I have five sisters. My sister called. She was just like, yo, everything you said was dope, but you shouldn't have called her a bitch.
Right.
That to me made it personal. So for that, to Amber Rose, I apologize for calling you a bitch.
Yeah.
Now, everything else I said, I ain't apologizing.
He was all over the blogs, bro. He was everywhere.
That's okay. But listen, when you have an opinion and you create a public platform, people are going to write about what you write. You know, what you say. The one thing I found interesting, because I actually was going back and forth with Bossa, right? Their mm-hmm. first title was Jason Lee Slams Amber Rose.
Yeah.
Then the next day it was like Thirsty Blogger Slams Amber Rose. Shit. But this is the deal. I've spent money with Bossup. Mm. I don't have a problem with Bossup. I love the fact that Hollywood Unlocked is growing to the extent that people feel a need to attack me. And that's okay. Mm. I don't take it personal. I literally don't lay in bed and go, oh my God, I can't believe they said this and that or whatever. I really don't.
Yeah.
But I did watch the show, and my own criticism of my own participation was, okay, I believe in women, and I believe in the feminist movement. Mm-hmm. I believe in people like Gloria Steinem and Oprah and other mm-hmm. people that have done whatever they can to contribute to the advancement of women. Mm-hmm. So that way women are treated equally as men. Mm-hmm. I was watching The View yesterday. There was an author on the show, and she was talking about, you know, things she did to stay competitive in media. She had facelifts. She did all these crazy things mm-hmm. to feel like she could be equal to a man. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like women should have to go through that. But I also firmly believe that a slut walk, and the way that it's happening here mm-hmm. without knowing how many, I do want to do my research mm-hmm. Because we have Benzino coming on the show who mm-hmm. has had his own feelings about the slut walk mm-hmm. is how much money are you creating? Slut scholarships? Are mm-hmm. you creating? No. And I'm not even trying to be funny, playing on the word, right? Yeah. Provide scholarships, provide programs, go and speak to little girls and tell them that just because they're a woman, that doesn't make them less than a man. And because they're a woman, they are greater than a man because they gave the man life.
Right.
You know, do something to empower women. I can be critical of a platform, but I think when I lash out and say how I feel mm-hmm. personally mm-hmm. in this arena, it kind of dims down the light from what I'm trying to say.
I would have to agree. What's funny about that is I become the byproduct of that, you know, because I'm supposed to sit here and I'm supposed to defend all women. So when you launch into a tangent and, you know, go fucking like, you know, scorched earth on motherfuckers, and then I'm expected to check you. Motherfuckers, you try it. You try that.
But
okay.
I think this is, you know, when you go off on your rants, or he doesn't really go off on a rant, but when you do, or when I do, or if he was to, we're allowed to say our point of view.
It's true. And you are welcome to your opinions, and you know, you can be challenged on them, but they belong to you.
Yeah.
But when you call Amber Rose a bitch, or when you went off on Monice and called her Honice and all these things, the fucking blowback, the fucking brains are all over my face. And this isn't to say anything to you. Like, it's not a criticism to you. It's more like, this is just my reality. And it's more like, people, listen, okay, this is a show where he's got his own opinions. And yes, we will debate back and forth, but I choose my battles. That's just basically it. I just choose where I want to integrate my opinion and whatnot. And there's things that you said about Amber that I kind of do agree with my level of confusion. And maybe it's not just her. The whole slut walk thing, slut shaming. I fucking hate the phrase. I hate it. Yeah. I hate it. Slut. And I also don't, I know what she's trying to say. I know that she's trying to say that, you know, as a woman, just because you wear something doesn't mean that you should be, you know, judged and misunderstood or whatever the case is, or just basically dismissed or whatever the case is. But that's not reality. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't, I feel like the message is not very clear cut, or maybe I don't have a good enough understanding of it. I think a lot of people are really confused by the message. You know, well, listen, I'm a woman who made a career off of being sexual. Okay. But it was clearly a business. When those cameras went off, I put my jogging pants on and I went the fuck home, and I probably, like, you know, had dinner with the crew or whatever, but like it was just a business. And I knew how to like counter those images with a lot of, like, you know, responsible action, and to talk about the fact it's just business. It's just, you know, it's just something that I do. It's adult entertainment. It's not nude, but it's not for everybody's eyes. You
well,
know?
Listen, let me be very clear, because I don't personally respond to any, I don't report to anybody. I say what the fuck I want to say.
Except Jesus.
I report to who? I don't report to anybody, because we don't report to Jesus. Jesus is not a report card. Okay. So let me be very clear. I don't apologize for any opinion or belief that I have on this show, nor, you know, if you guys are getting shot in drive-bys, I would say buy some Kevlar and let's go.
but
let me
lot.
Just say, like, another thing that really bothered me was what I said about Karrueche was not in any way negative. In fact, I said a lot of positive things about Karrueche. And I've communicated with Karrueche myself, so she's clear, I'm clear, we cool. I love and respect Karrueche. I think she's done a dynamic job of building her brand.
What did they say you said about her? I saw
that in the comments, a lot of blogs.
See, here's the thing, what people have to realize, I'm going to school the audience. Bloggers, people like me that work online, we rely on you clicking our clicking our links for us to get paid. It's called clickbait. So if I write a title and say Melissa Ford busted wide open for Floyd Mayweather,
I'm clicking that.
You're gonna click it. Now when you get in there, if she like busted her head falling in his house, that may be the story, but to get your money, to get your business, we baited you to click our link. So they basically said, Jason Lee goes crazy on Karrueche and Amber Rose. Of course you want to click to find out what the fuck I said.
Yeah.
And then when you get in there, the way they creatively told the story, it made it look like I attacked both. So I reached out to Karrueche. I'm not reaching out to Amber Rose. I don't have nothing to fucking say to her.
Right.
And again, I don't hate Amber Rose. My whole point of addressing the issue was, I don't talk bad about her brand. I am critical of the slut walk because I don't understand its purpose. And I heard she had something to say about Hollywood Unlocked, so I created a pathway for my message to get to her. Now, I know she got that message.
Yo, absolutely.
Now, whether she responds or doesn't respond, I'm okay with that. But as long as she knows, I know you talking shit. And if you want to talk to me, come here and talk on our show. Or let's sit down and have a conversation. I did get a text message from a phone number that I didn't know that said, keep saying my name on your motherfucking show, bitch. I'm assuming that, shit. I don't know who it is. It could be anybody.
It could be anybody.
But, you know, I called it back. They didn't answer.
You know, I would go out on a limb to say that she would have a better, you know, conversation with us here on this show than I feel like the opportunity she was given on Reverend Run and Tyrese's show. They brought her on the show literally just to condemn her. I watched that episode and I was disgusted with what they did.
Is this?
It was the show with Rev Run and Tyrese on VH1. Okay. What a man said. I don't know. A fucking stupid man's opinion. I don't fucking know. It irritated the shit out of me because this was one instance where I was just like, they're literally bashing just her. Bashing her, like, right in front of her face. She did a great job, and she was very dignified and very elegant and very eloquent. I loved watching her in that.
And when you guys said, you know, when you've met her, she's sweet. Sweet. Let me be honest. She's never been rude to me. She's never been disrespectful to me. But her team told me that a third party got to her and told her, don't fuck with me. So she decided, I ain't fucking with him.
Right. Okay.
When we've always been cool.
Right.
And we supported the launch of her emoji. We've been supportive of the Amber Rose stuff. And mm-hmm. we have been critical of the slut walk, but that is the extent. We've always said how good of a mom she is. We've always mm-hmm. said how beautiful her son is. We've always supported her.
Yeah.
So I didn't understand, and I still don't understand. You know, I'm not that type of person. You can't come to me and say, don't fuck with Melissa. I'm mm-hmm. going, and she will tell you. Mm-hmm. She came to me a long time ago and told me not to fuck with somebody, and mm-hmm. I didn't listen to her. Mm-hmm. I got burnt by that person, mm-hmm. and it was like, okay. Mm-hmm. But I had to have my own experience. Mm-hmm. I am not from Hollywood. I live here. I work here. My company's Hollywood Unlocked, but I'm a mm-hmm. real motherfucker. Mm-hmm. Now, if we were all sitting in the living room, and you said, and I said, oh, what do you think about so-and-so? You'd be like, fuck that nigga. Mm-hmm. And I may be like, if you ask me, what do you think about him or her? I may be like, that nigga's a bitch, or she's a bitch. But see, mm-hmm. I understand having this platform when you yeah. say somebody's a bitch.
Yeah.
That transcends beyond a normal conversation.
This feels like our living room a lot of the time.
Honestly, that conversation yeah. was like,
you forget the mic.
We're just talking.
The camera's yeah. on. You yeah. forget that a yeah. lot.
Exactly. And, you know, back to the whole slut walk thing, I think that really, honestly, what my problem is, like, you know, there's this argument of trying to diffuse the word nigger or mm-hmm. nigger or whatever the case is, mm-hmm. you know, thank God I'm half black so I can use it, you know.
Unlike
our guest who's coming in later. But anyways, that was a segue.
Right, right.
Yeah, exactly. But so people have made the argument that to use the word is to try to diffuse the word. And so I guess I want to know, is that the premise for using the word slut?
We can sit here all day and go back and forth about what. Amber Rose, I'm telling you right now, ain't never gonna come and sit in this chair.
She might. Won't. You never know.
Hold on. Let me tell you why she won't. Because every single celebrity that calls and says, I want to come on that show, but I got to approve the questions first. We don't approve the questions.
No.
Today, Chet Hanks, son of Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, is coming in.
Mm.
You know, I was at lunch with Melissa. Mm-hmm. Literally the morning I saw him walking up while mm-hmm, we were sitting mm-hmm, at lunch, mm-hmm. I had thought, I want to interview this guy because I just find him fascinating, mm-hmm, right? Just mm-hmm. out the blue. Boom, here he comes. This organically happened.
Yeah.
You know, for him, he was like, I've never done a sit-down interview. I'm like, listen, come. He was a little nervous because he was like, what y'all going to ask? And I said, listen, as a practice, we don't approve or disapprove questions.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great experience.
Yeah.
And I think everybody that leaves here feels that way. But there is a lot of fear to come on the show. I talked to Ski, who owns Dash Radio. Yeah. He told me that he gets the most complaints and the most calls about our show.
You know, which is a good thing.
And they struggle to book, because I was like, y'all motherfuckers ain't booking nobody. He was like, people are afraid to come on your show. But I'm going to tell you, we are the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Amen. We're the truth. We are going to always ask the questions that the fans want to know, but we're going to do it in a way that makes you feel comfortable. And so for that reason is why I do apologize to Amber, because our brand is not about lashing out and mm-hmm. attacking. Even if I feel that way privately or personally, yeah. I could have tempered that a little bit. So I do apologize for that. But I don't apologize for being critical.
And listen, and it's hard to get an apology out of, I almost call him J-Lo, Jason. I commend you on that. And that was no shade, Jason.
You're cruising for a fucking bruising, man.
I almost really called you J-Lo, but I
listen,
love you.
Listen, I'm not worried about it, because before I even got to the show today, I said to myself, I'm interviewing a son of Hollywood royalty. I won't talk about GOV and a homosexual. I can get to the studio, and shout out to your girlfriend who helped you out with that term, emasculate, because I only follow the gay shit that you say.
What are you talking about?
I got one more thing I want to say. So shout out to Amber Rose. I apologize for calling you a bitch.
Army assemble.
Shout out to Amber Rose for calling you a bitch. Okay, here we go. Yesterday. Yes. So I got invited to meet Oprah Winfrey.
Yo, I'm fucking mad. I want to hear this story.
Stop talking. So I get this invitation from my friend. I'm going to say her full name, Saptosa Foster from the 135th Street Agency. I'm going to tell you why. When I was at Essence Festival last year, me and the team were exhausted because it's so fucking hot out there.
Oh my God.
And if you don't drink a lot of water.
Yes.
Yo asked to get dehydrated and get tired. So I was tired. So I see Saptosa as I'm going in my hotel. And Saptosa says, I want to invite you to a dinner. No, I saw her at the Ciroc brunch.
Yeah.
I said, she said, I want to invite you to a dinner. I said, okay, send me the invite. So she sends the invite. It's literally just a black car with like the address and all that. I'm like, I ain't going to that dinner. It was Oprah Winfrey's dinner. So I was pissed. The next day, Claudia Jordan and I are stalking Oprah in the mezzanine, but we can't get in because they've roped it all off. And we see Oprah walk by and wave, and I'm like, fuck. So I've always had it in my heart to meet Oprah, and I'm going to tell you why. When I was younger, my brother got murdered. You know the story. Mm. I was very depressed. I fell into a deep depression. That's where the drinking started. That's where the gaining of the weight started. That's mm-hmm. where a lot of, I think, just issues around life in general happened for me because it was such a life-changing thing. Mm. Oprah, it was her show 10 years later, and I literally was like mourning for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Saw a show where Dr. Phil was on the show with this woman whose daughter had died. And Oprah said, what are you going to do when you leave the show? She said, well, I was planning on going home and killing myself. And Dr. Phil was like, really? And he said, why are you going to continue to mourn over the one day your daughter died instead of living to celebrate the whole life she lived? It was that show that made me literally.
Damn, that was deep.
Literally, that was the last day I cried about. I mean, I can still get emotional. Yeah.
Right.
But it was the last day that I was like actively mourning my brother's death. So I had always wanted to tell Oprah this. I didn't get to tell her this yesterday because, of course, when you're in her presence, it's just like.
She just loses the power of speech.
I have said, it's God.
Had a stroke.
Jesus. Oprah, then Beyonce, no, right?
Michael Jackson has to be in there somewhere.
I walk in the room. Mm. There's a bunch of people in the room.
Yeah.
Variety, all these outlets. And you know what? They weren't sitting in the front row. I'm like, are you fucking nuts? See, this is the difference between a person that's a go-getter and that wants it and a person that just want to be in the room.
Yeah.
I sat right in the front seat.
Yeah.
And I put my arms and I was waiting for Oprah. So Oprah comes out. Her security's there. Clearly they spot me. Clearly these are black men. These are black men. So clearly they've seen Love and Hip Hop.
Hilarious. Because
they're watching me the whole time.
Yeah.
So I'm like this. What's up? How you doing? Because I'm trying to make friends with security. Because you know, if you cool with them, that's how you get in.
Yeah.
So I'm telling the girls next to me, I said, they said we can't take no photos. They were like, yeah. I said, we going to take a photo. They're like, this is not going to happen. I said, no, we're going to take a photo. So I go up to her security afterwards. I go, hey, bro, can I get a photo? He was like, nah, she's not doing a photo. I said, okay, not a problem. So I waited in the pocket. Same way I did Beyonce when I jumped from behind the tree. I waited in the pocket. Oh, and I'm standing there with my phone. And I keep tapping my phone so it doesn't go, so it doesn't lock. And my phone is open. My picture is ready. So Oprah walks up and I go, and she looks at me. The funny thing is, the way I was stalking her, she felt like, this nigga thinks I'm his prey.
Right.
I was stalking her with this look. And so she hit the corner and she looked at me and I go, okay, I had a whole bunch of shit I wanted to say to you, but I forgot. And she goes, well, it's nice to meet you. I'm Oprah. I go, I know you are Jason. I think I may have curtsied or bowed or kissed her hand. I don't remember. So I was like, it's so nice to meet you. Thank you. So then she left and I was like, fuck, I didn't get a chance to ask her.
For a picture
or just anything. Like, okay, I need to have a better memorable moment. So I wait, I walk a little ahead. And then she comes back around. She looks at me and she goes, you back? I go, hi.
I remember what I was just saying.
I was just like, I own Hollywood Unlocked. She looked at my name tag. I said, I own Hollywood Unlocked. I'm a big fan of yours. Thank you. That was all I said.
And wow.
So she walks away. And now I'm like, so I go over to get a soda. And I think my whole team is in the chat room saying, you better get a picture. We know you're going to get a picture. So I'm thinking, okay, I can't be no bitch. Jason Lee ain't no bitch. Okay, ain't got no bitch. Okay. This is it.
Now you turn into a stalker now.
So I now pump myself up. She goes and takes photos. So people are trying to get a photo. And Oprah's like, no, I'm not doing any photos because if I take one, I got to take one with everybody.
Yeah.
So she said, fine, just get your cameras out. So she's walking, and they're trying to get it, and people can't get their phones. My shit is ready. As soon as Oprah walked up, she went like this, and I took the picture.
You caught her.
And she goes, now that's how you do it. And she gave me a high five, and I was like, yes, I had my moment. And she walked away.
And from that picture, I said, yeah, she was walking. But it was in a quick drift. I was like, damn, you got a picture. She was, she throwing up a gang sign?
I have a picture. Listen, that's not going to disrespect Oprah Winfrey.
No, what was she throwing up, bro?
She was throwing up $2.9 billion.
Yes.
And you know what? I fell in love with Ava DuVernay yesterday.
Oh, I love her. She's
because
so
fine. Their relationship, the dynamic she was speaking about, women being in front of the film, a camera, but also how important it is for women to be directors and how season two of Queen Sugar, which was what I was there for, is directed by all women.
Oh, wow.
And the movie Wonder Woman that I went to go see the other night is directed by a woman as well.
Mm-hmm,
and the movie's phenomenal. And
Oprah,
and I hate going to movies.
Oprah and Ava DuVernay, they're doing a Twinkle in Time. Yeah.
A Wrinkle in Time?
A Twinkle.
It's a Wrinkle in Time. She talked about it yesterday. It's okay. I was there. It's a Wrinkle in Time. But where I fell in love with the duo was Selma. And Selma was such a dynamic movie.
Twinkle.
Not he thinking of the West Hollywood version, the musical. Okay, listen. The movie, I mean the
Okay.
The two of them together and how they support each other. There was a moment that wasn't caught on camera that I want to share. Ava's talking about how Oprah gave her full control.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She was like, yeah, you know, Oprah gave me full control. There was a moment. Ava didn't see this, but Oprah was sitting on there and she was like this. That was that bitch. What? You know, but just being in her presence. And this is the only thing I want to say because our guest just walked in.
Mm.
Is that there are times that I really struggle with doing the work that I do the way I do it. Because I literally am a cross between Oprah Winfrey and Wendy Williams with a dick.
That fucking visual is fucking fucked up, bro.
On one hand, I want to have mega influence, mega reach, and do really good for people. Mm-hmm. I really wholeheartedly really do.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, I have an obligation as a fan and as a consumer of pop culture to tell it how it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a dick.
Right.
So
That always seems to creep its way into the conversation. Because if you think
about it, in Hollywood, most people are just super, super polished and branded and packaged. And some people are super reckless.
Yes.
I feel like literally I'm in the middle.
Yeah. I would like to be in the middle.
Yeah, between two tops.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
There's nothing more satisfying than finding the perfect green paint for your living room. Except maybe popping open that can of Valspar Ultra and rolling that first smooth stroke on the wall. And there's nothing more satisfying than admiring your freshly painted wall.
Ooh.
Except maybe peeling off the painter's tape to see those crisp edges. But the most satisfying part of all? Valspar Ultra's price tag, starting at $29.98 a gallon. Affordable, durable, available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.